Welcome everyone to another edition of the Koshcast. I am Mohaned and I am here with Rache. Rache, how's it going?
Oh, it's great. You left out the fantastic Rache.
Sorry, it's part of my psyche now that I think fantastic, I just don't always say it.
Oh, it's all good.
We are missing two members. Alex is off recording some music for his band, which, you know, he's artistic like that.
Oh, he told me he was recording some new Kosh music, actually.
Well, I mean, if you like our intro, then stay tuned because there's more coming your way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and Bernie is in the U.S. trying to sell people stuff.
Yes, I believe that he's also on an MLS scouting mission.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. For what, for the podcast?
It's
or
definitely for the podcast, you know, when we actually buy some players in the future.
Right.
For UTCFC.
That's true. So speaking of UTCFC, we're both sitting here in the same jersey. We have a game in a couple of hours. Are you excited about that?
Very excited. We are the top of the league for now. However, our opponents today are last year's winners.
True. They beat us, I think, in the semis.
They did not beat us in the semis. They beat us once during the season, a little 1-0. I believe I was goalkeeper for that game. and my defense let me down, surprisingly. Oh.
Of course you'd say that, since I don't remember what happened. Yeah. But
we did have an exciting 2-2 draw with them as well in the season.
Speaking of exciting draws, we had an absolutely amazing game this afternoon. We had TFC draw with New York City FC 4-4 away, TFC playing away. You know, they're not always the best on the road, but this... And they did start. They did start in TFC fashion, to be honest, going down, I think, 2-0.
Yes, so this game is... Okay, so to give you a bit of a background story on this game, they recently played in Toronto at BMO Field, and New York City came off with a 2-0 win, even though TFC completely dominated that game.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and so this rematch was equally as exciting, if not more, but David Villa...
People were doing the whole Villa versus Juvenco thing, because I think in the first game, even though TFC played well, Villa really is the one that kind of came out trumps.
Yeah, Villa's been playing really well. He's been scoring a lot of free kicks, and he opened the scoring today with another free kick. To be fair, I think Konopka, the goalkeeper for TFC, could have done a lot better.
Right, I agree. I felt like, I mean, it was well struck, and it was kind of put in a really good spot, but when you get a touch to it like that, just a stronger wrist, and I think he might have kind of put it around the post.
Yeah, he got two strong hands to it.
Oh, very, very well done from Villa.
Yeah, so at that point, it was 1-0 to New York City, and shortly after that, TFC actually had a penalty and a chance to tie the game, and the Atom Ant, Sebastian Giovinco, actually missed this penalty, hitting it off the post.
Yeah. His technique was brilliant, but it was just, it was unlucky. It was unlucky.
He's going for the low left corner, the high percentage play, but he missed, and it was still 1-0, and soon after that, the second penalty of the game was awarded to New York, and David Villa scores. Actually, he misses this penalty.
So they both missed the penalty.
Yeah. So he missed this penalty, and the rebound, you want to describe
that? Like, I couldn't, like, as a keeper, when you save a penalty, it's such a nice feeling that, you know, you keep your team's hopes in the game and all that. And then the way after Konopka saved it brilliantly, it wasn't the best penalty, but he saved it.
Great save.
And then somehow this crazy rebound, the guy tried to put it back in and it came off the TFC defender and went right between Konopka and his near post. And you could just see it in his face. He was like,
just that typical TFC misfortune that we've seen time and time again. 2-0 at that point.
So 2-0 down. They're not playing bad. They're playing well.
And then the show begins.
And then the next 9 minutes were just out of this world from, I have to say, the MLS's best player.
Absolutely. I mean, this has been talked about for a couple of games now. And if there were any critics, I think they've been completely silent today. Because Sebastian Giovinco, in a 9-minute stretch of madness, scored a hat-trick, first hat-trick ever for Toronto FC.
That's an amazing stat. They've never scored a hat-trick.
In their 9 years of being an MLS franchise, they have not had a player score a hat-trick, even including Jermaine Defoe, the bloody big deal who was signed last season, couldn't do it. So that's great. They're up 3-2 going into halftime.
So, well, let's recap how those goals happened. So the first one was, I don't know which goal I prefer, to be honest. The one I like was the one where he kind of broke the offside trap. I think it was his third.
He broke
the offside trap. TFC, kind of a nice ball down the right. Giovinco was kind of being lazy, so he was still up there doing not much. And then the ball came in, low cross, and you think he's going to put it low and hard, kind of how Adebayor finished against Liverpool, if you remember that game in the Champions League. But then he kind of chipped it really nicely over the out-rushing keeper, and it was such a nice, cool finish.
Yes, it was a brilliant chip. I have to say that New York City's defending was... absolutely terrible. Abysmal defending. That high line was right. actually very close to the center circle.
I agree with you. It was crazy to do at 2-0. Yeah. I don't know why you're not kind of further down.
And they were trying to play the offside trap on that goal too.
True.
But that was a 2-2 goal. I think the best goal that Giovinco scored was actually the equalizing goal where I think Johnson it was who gave him a back heel nutmeg through right. pass right. and then the one-on-one finish into the bottom corner.
It was a very nice finish actually. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of the defender was closing in on him, but he just kind of Giovinco loves that side netting finish. Yeah. He's so lethal with those that he just doesn't give the keeper a chance.
Absolutely.
The other one was the penalty, which he put in the exact same spot.
Yes.
Again, really close to the post. Yeah. Like it's just almost too good.
He's not going to miss that one twice. Yeah. No player is going to miss that one twice. No top player.
Yeah, so that puts TFC up 3-2. Villa comes back with a penalty to make it 3-3. I think you think it's 50% dive, 50% keeper?
To be fair, we discussed this before, and to our listeners, I think you can also relate to this a little bit, because there was some good build-up play leading into the penalty. Villa's one-on-one. He nudges the ball past the goalkeeper, and he knows that the goalkeeper is going to make contact with him.
His knees go, right?
His knees don't necessarily go. He makes them go.
No, sorry. That's what I mean. Like, he kind of lets them go. He buckles. And
yeah, there was no way it wasn't going to be a penalty.
Right.
But it was a penalty, I think, all said and done.
Have a problem with these penalties where it's a one-on-one and the keeper comes out. To me, it's like you need to still have control of the ball as a striker, because sometimes you just kick it as hard as you can and you know you're going to get the contact. I remember one, it was like a Rooney versus
Arsenal. Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Exactly that one.
He literally toe-poked it into row Z and it was still given as a penalty, you know?
He did that. I remember seeing that on the replay. He literally had a goal kick.
He just kicked it as hard as he can. He literally kicked it as hard as he can.
Yeah.
So Villa makes that 3-3.
3-3, and that's the fourth penalty of the game, and this is only the 60-something minute played.
Right, and I think you were saying that this is a league record for penalties.
Yes, this is an MLS record, four penalties in a game, never been done before.
Mm,
and I'm not sure if we mentioned, but that 9-minute hat-trick by Giovinco is also the third fastest hat-trick in MLS history.
Right. So it's not only TFC's first, it's also the third fastest in MLS. That's impressive.
A lot of records in this game, yeah.
Yep, so that's it. And then
that leads us to another inspirational moment by the Atom Ant once again.
Correct. He runs down the left-hand side. It's like the 81st minute. He blocks a back pass from a New York City FC player. And then he just takes the ball past two players. The last guy, he just accelerates past him so nicely, puts it in with his left. Yeah. And then the finish was obviously a very simple finish. Yeah. It was really all Giovinco.
To be fair, this is a mixture of two goals. This is a mixture of the Kaká lung-bursting run against Celtic in the Champions League in, I think, 2006, plus the Cristiano Ronaldo tap-in from Evra assist against Arsenal at the Emirates.
Right.
So,
seriously,
you can put those goals together and you get exactly what Giovinco just did when he linked together with Delgado for the fourth goal.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for TFC, this was not the winner of the game.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be TFC if the game had ended 4-3.
Exactly.
It would just be like, what? Something's not right here.
Yeah.
So after all those heroics, it's the 81st minute. You think, you know what? Just shut up shop. You're done.
Yeah. The new substitute, Craval, comes on the field and they're defending a set piece.
Mm-hmm.
Ball comes in from the right. There's a header, and I think if Craval left it, the ball would have gone out for either a goal kick or a corner.
Right.
But Craval instead kicks it back into...
Crosses it back in.
Yeah, literally. I don't think even an attacker could have made a cross like this.
Yeah.
It was right back into the area where most of the NYC players were.
Yes.
The penalty spot. And so a free header to just equalize and to come on in like a minute before that goal and to do that to your team, you must be the scapegoat of the week.
Yeah, scapegoat of the week.
You must be.
The game ends 4-4. Such an entertaining game. It was a lot of fun. That's the kind of thing that the MLS can give you. I think Lampard was in the stands watching as well, so at least he's not going to think it's too boring. He's going to think, wow, does this happen every week or what?
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
Speaking of which, Steven Gerrard was also on the field for his LA Galaxy debut. He left his man go for
nothing
to score. Yeah, so he left his man and the man went down and scored the goal.
So we're just waiting on the Pirlo and Lampard games now, eh?
Yeah, so there's some really good things to look forward to. I think the surprise of the season in the MLS so far has been Giovinco's outstanding performances.
To be honest, I didn't think Villa was gonna have such an impact either. He's been great.
It's great. You can see that these players really care about
exactly. They're professional. They want to play well regardless of where they're playing.
That's great.
So just to recap the Eastern Conference here with regards to TFC. So DC United are, let's say for now, top with 35 points. New York Red Bulls are second with 26 and TFC are third with 24. The idea here, though, is that the games played is so different. So DC has four games over TFC. So technically, TFC win those four games and they're top of the table.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not realistic, but...
Yeah, we see this a lot in the MLS standings. I think we mentioned this on an earlier podcast where there's a huge variance in the games played between these teams. It's not fair. And along with the summer fixtures, we have a lot of international games.
That's also not fair. Yeah. I mean, the TFC didn't have Bradley today or Altidore.
Michael Bradley is at the Gold Cup for the US.
So basically, I agree. These two things, that the amount of different games played is not fair because it doesn't... Because it puts people at a disadvantage when you're looking at the table. Should I take this game safe or should I go for the win? And you're not sure. You can't tell with four games in hand how to play, right? And you're right. The internationals right in the middle of the season doesn't make sense either.
Absolutely.
That might be a good point to move on to Moo Moo of the Week then.
Yeah, let's do it. Moo Moo of the Week. So, this week's first Moo Moo Candidate of the Week goes out to Steve McLaren. There's a couple of different reasons why he is a Moo Moo, but we'll get right into it. It's for his signing of the Dutch defender Wijnaldum. And so he's now dreaming of a top 8 finish.
Yeah.
With his added steel and defense. Wijnaldum, whose name, as Alex has said, sounds like 1-0 down. If you say it 10 times as fast as you can.
Which is synonymous with basically Newcastle's form in the past like couple months.
Absolutely. And so Steve McLaren being at Newcastle, being the new man at Newcastle, doesn't realize that, well, this is Newcastle.
Yeah.
Where Mike Ashley is going to be an enemy of progress towards whatever you want to do with the club.
That's very true.
So you're not getting that top 8 finish. You are a moo-moo. He's not. And if anything, daring to dream that.
I think we've even talked about how Mike Ashley would rather Newcastle not be in Europe because it just costs some money.
Exactly. Yeah. Mike Ashley also moo-moo of the week, as a side note for that.
My moo-moo candidate is Hull City as a club. Their new sponsor is Flamingoland, which is a new... A new zoo, I guess, in Yorkshire, in England. And the idea is that now Hull City are the Tigers, who are sponsored by Flamingoland. So it's all pink and orange, just way too much.
Flamingos and tigers. Sounds like a zoo.
Exactly. There's so much animals, so many orange and pink. The idea is that I was basically thinking they should relocate to San Diego and just make the zoo their new stadium. That's it. Just play in San Diego.
Sounds like a good business case already.
Yeah. It'd be fantastic. And also, Steve Bruce turns orange a lot when he's angry.
Yes, he is quite orange.
So this all really works well.
Yes. You know, speaking of sponsors, TFC next season, hopefully, God forbid, might be sponsored by Pizza Pizza.
I'm looking forward to that, Momo. I'm really looking forward to that.
I would absolutely hate
that. The basketball team already gets, like, you get free pizza if they win, like, with more than 100 points.
Please don't make it happen.
So North American, isn't it?
Third Momo candidate goes out to Antalyaspor, the football club in Turkey.
Yeah, their president.
Yeah, their president in particular, because Ronaldinho, very lucrative signing for this Turkish club, seems to have really got him out of his seat, because he came out publicly and stated that this club, Antalyaspor, has signed Ronaldinho.
Yes,
except that. Asterix. Oh, we're going to sign it in 2 days. He's going to die, but it's done. It's done. You know.
Don't worry about it. Everyone party.
Yeah. Like, book your flights. Book your season tickets for next season. We got Ronaldinho. Except that 2 days later, Ronaldinho, the man himself, actually signs for Fluminense in Brazil.
Yes. Which is fantastic.
So, not surprisingly, have not heard from this man since.
I feel bad for Eto, though. Because if Eto actually signs for Antalya, I think he was kind of hoping that Ronaldinho would join him at least for some company, and now Eto's all alone. If it goes through, I feel bad for Eto.
I'm not sure Eto's alone. I think the club president has physically gone to make sure that Eto comes, because if he fails on both fronts, he's out.
Yeah,
there's no way.
It's crazy that this newly promoted side is signing Eto and Ronaldinho or trying to, at least.
Oh, you know, we're gonna talk about newly promoted sides signing people very shortly.
All right, so it being the summer, obviously there's a lot of transfer news happening, transfer rumors.
Best part about the summer.
Yeah, I agree. And 4-4 draws.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. A couple of results here and there. Yeah.
So Sterling to City seems like it's moving forward. We've seen during the week that Sterling has called in sick to training, has been asked to not be on the tour squad for Liverpool, which, by the way, Balotelli didn't make, as a side note. But now we see that the Sterling thing looks like it's moving forward. The rumors are that Liverpool have accepted a bid of £44 million, plus 5 million in add-ons, which Alex would like to say is probably just bollocks. Daycare fees. But I don't know, 49 million pounds.
This transfer is Liverpool winning in the transfer market.
Yep.
Once again, we've seen in the past they won with Torres sales,
Suarez
sales, yep. You know, ludicrous fees. They basically sold Raheem Sterling for the same amount they sold Fernando Torres for.
Yeah.
Now, this is an unproven player. They've probably sold him for a surplus of at least 30 million pounds, in my opinion. And City, with their third bid, I really feel that this is just a formality for them to bid three times. They're going to get their player. They haven't done anything else in the summer transfer market.
I agree.
Maybe this is going to sell a few shirts.
I agree, but to me, like, I think City needs Sterling, just from a footballing point of view, from the fact that he's homegrown. I think they need him, and I totally agree that they should go get him. My point is, they seem to be the only one interested in Sterling. That's the first thing. Second thing is, it seems like Sterling is really pushing hard for a move anyways. He's very unhappy. I don't know if Liverpool want to just hold on to him out of spite. So it just seems like there's no reason to be paying over the top for a player that, one, definitely wants to leave, and two, is, you know, not really sought after as hard as we thought he would be. This is very similar to the De Gea thing. Why should Madrid overpay for a player that is on his last year of contract and clearly wants to leave? Like, it just doesn't seem... It's not a bidding war. Like, City are warring themselves. It's like, oh, yeah, City bid that much? Okay, I'm going to bid a bit more than City this time. And then, well, I'm going to bid more than City this time again.
To be fair, Liverpool did always say he was a 50 million value. I really don't think that's the case. But, you know, they would have been prepared to let him sit on the bench and rot. Because he has disrespected the club. He's done everything possible in his power to engineer his way out of this.
We've heard Steven Gerrard's comments recently about how Sterling needs to man up and blah, blah, blah. But we do forget that he is a very young guy. He's really young. I mean, you can't expect him to be able to handle all this stuff as well as we would like him to be able to.
You know what? We think he's young. He's got four kids. He is far more mature than we are.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But yes, I think Liverpool fans are going to collectively breathe a sigh of relief because they have a lot of money in the bank now. Sterling is gone, and so that entire negative energy
They've
is
made
going
some
to be
good
gone.
Signings, too, to yes. be honest. Liverpool have made incredible signings. I think Klein, for example, has been a fantastic signing.
Yes. Nathan Klein for 17.7 million. They also got James Milner. Let's not forget about James Milner.
For free. I mean, the wages are a bit high, but it's still a very good player, I think, in my
some
opinion.
Some squad players, Danny Ings, Adam Bogdan. Yeah. Of course, the biggest signing so far, Roberto Firmino.
Yeah, so they've done good work. It would be interesting to see what they do. Rumors are, I mean, they're not very solid right now, but rumors are they're looking to Royce as a possible replacement for Sterling. So if they really pull that off, then I think they have a much better squad than they did last season.
Well, they've got 50 million in the bank right now, so we could see anything from these guys.
Moving back to City, we've seen recently that City have been linked with an 8 million bid for Delph, Fabian Delph from Aston Villa, and it looked like it was going through. But then recently, Fabian Delph came out and just categorically denied it, saying, I am staying at Villa, I am captain of this club, and I will lead them out of the tunnel next season. And I think that's a weird stance that we don't see often in this kind of world of football.
I have a feeling that there's a lot more to this behind the scenes, because if we look at the transfers going into Aston Villa, we've got Scott Sinclair and we've got Michael Richards coming over from Man City.
Right.
And I imagine they don't have very good things to say about going to Man City.
That's
especially a person of Boney's place and stature. I really don't think he's going to be a starter at Man City.
Right.
Let's face the reality.
Yeah, I agree that Delph kind of... I think he looked at the previous signings of City, the previous English signings, the Sinclairs, the Richards, and City aren't a club known to give chances to kind of players who aren't superstars. So if Delph comes for 8 million, I don't think he's going to get the amount of playing time that they might have been promising him anyways.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think we've seen it with Milner. Milner was very similar.
Milner was getting a fair amount of playing time, but James Milner did not peak at Man City.
Right.
Let's be real about that. And he's not the only player. We got to talk about Wilfred Bony as well.
Wilfred Bony. So they signed him in January for a ludicrous amount. If you think 44 or whatever million is too high for Sterling, 32 million for Bony is absurd.
I believe that's more than they paid for Aguero.
It's absolutely insane. We'll see how they play him next year. The second half of the season for Bony at City, he didn't look good. fine. There was African Cup of Nations. He was still kind of getting into the team. But I just don't see him being that insane force.
No,
that,
you can't take Aguero's spot in the lineup.
No. And are they going to play both of them? I don't know. No.
Even Dzeko couldn't play with Aguero. Dzeko was on the bench.
True. Dzeko's leaving. Yeah. Jovetic apparently is also leaving. So, I don't know. City aren't really linked with a lot of other players. I think the mistake they did last season is that they didn't sign anyone at the beginning of the season when they had won the league. They didn't create extra competition in the squad. Everything was complacent. Yaya Touré, we saw how complacent he was. And if they do it again this season, I mean, fine, they might get their Sterling. But if they don't get other positions, their left back is not very solid.
this is coming from a place of hatred towards Gael Clichy.
Yes, Gael Clichy is not a very good player. And City need to do better this season and create more competition in the squad so they can kind of come back and try and win the league again, because they're good at that. They're good at kind of winning, losing. So this is their winning season.
Well, to be fair, even their wins were kind of just barely getting over the finish line.
So that's for City. Let's move on to their neighbors, Manchester United. A lot of transfer dealings here. The ones that we already know about are Depay. That happened a while back, so that's fine. We've also seen Van Persie and Nani leave. I think United fans are going to be really happy to see Nani go with all his crazy wages. They're both, Van Persie and him, are now at Fenerbahce.
Yes. They have both signed this week for Fenerbahce. I think that ends a chapter of United's recent glories. Of course, Van Persie was signed to win the league. He won their last title, the 20th. But of course, as we could see last season under the Van Gaal system, Van Persie was not fitting in well.
He was old. There was a lot of injuries, and it didn't work out. But to be fair, I still think he was worth it. That 20 million United paid for him to win a league, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, but guess who they just signed this week?
Who?
Well, I believe his name is Bastian Schweinsteiger.
So you're pretty happy about that, I take it.
I am happy, and I think a lot of United fans will share this sentiment. I'm really happy about Schweinsteiger joining United. I think our midfield is going to be very solid next season.
And he's not as old as I thought. Yeah. He's only 30.
Well, he will be 31 when the season starts.
Okay.
However, I think the signing is maybe 4 years too late. Right. Because
same as Schneider, for example, which absolutely. Was rumors 4 years ago.
We were linked to Schweinsteiger before he signed a contract extension at Bayern.
Yeah.
But now with the Van Gaal link, finally we got our man.
I mean, I think it's a good signing. I think he's experienced, he's solid in midfield, and that's kind of, sometimes you need that kind of thing, especially in European games.
Yes.
I think he's going to be very useful in Europe as a leader as well.
Absolutely.
In the squad. And, you know, it's not a bad signing. He's not that old. I mean, we've seen some players. Pirlo was fantastic last season. Tevez, all these players, they were quite old and they were playing fantastic.
He is signed for his experience, but also because of the Champions League fixtures that are going to be coming up, United are going to be challenging on more than, you know, multiple fronts.
Yeah, four fronts.
And United were also one of the teams that were most hit by injuries last season.
Mm-hmm.
But on a side note, I want to bring up another point about this Manchester United team, and that is the fact that a couple of seasons ago, when they were winning the league under Ferguson, they were attack heavy, no midfield, and a good defense.
Right.
Now, you have a very stacked midfield,
right.
a questionable looking attack.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not questionable, just one guy. It's rude.
Yeah, there's one guy.
Yeah.
Hernandez, Chicharito, is on his way out.
Yeah.
Van Persie has left.
Yeah.
And so everyone else is James Wilson.
United needs a striker, that's for sure. You need to buy a striker.
Do we need a striker?
Well, I mean, you can't. I mean, with injuries and stuff, you cannot just have Rooney play all 60 games a season.
This is a fair point.
Yeah.
But with such a stacked midfield, you got Ander Herrera, Carrick,
How would you line up with all these midfielders? I mean, assuming it's a 4-3-3, I'd say Depay, Di Maria, he's still there on the wing.
It might very well be a 4-3-3 because there is that stability in midfield now. Right. If Schweinsteiger was your central midfielder, you could have a very good midfielder.
So Herrera
and Juan Mata.
Okay.
Playing on one of the, or maybe Juan Mata plays up.
Number 10. Okay.
Depay
or Di Maria possibly?
Yes. Now, I think what's actually going to happen is a 3-5-2 formation.
Okay.
With three central defenders, Smalling, Jones, and Evans.
Possibly Ramos?
Possibly Ramos. We won't say that because it's pretty likely he's not coming.
Yeah.
That, the stacked midfield we just mentioned, Schweinsteiger, Carrick, sitting, Ander Herrera in the middle, Mata, Ashley Young.
Right.
And then up front, you've got Di Maria
and
Wayne Rooney.
Yeah. Depay as well. Don't forget about Depay.
I totally forgot about Depay.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is stacked. It's very stacked. I think it's looking good for United fans to kind of be excited about next season. They also signed Darmian, who is the right back, because you guys definitely need the right back, that's for sure.
Yes, now Antonio Valencia might actually be back in right midfield where he should be.
I mean, there's a lot of players that are going to all of a sudden find that they don't have a spot in the team. Valencia, Carrick, I think, will also start to kind of
some of the aging players, I feel. But on the same front, we have to take into consideration that Chelsea are very strong. Very good squad depth.
Yeah.
Arsenal have made some good signings with Petr Cech recently.
Yeah.
And
the signings from last season. I mean, the Sanchez, the Cazorla's new form, Coquelin's new form. Like, I really
believe that the start of the season is going to be absolutely insane.
The teams are really strong. They're all really
strong. Very strong. And we could see these English teams go very far in Europe.
I really hope so, because recently they haven't done very well in Europe at all.
No,
So, before we move on from United, there are some rumors that Di Maria might be allowed to go. PSG seem to be interested. Blanc came out recently saying, I really like Di Maria. I mean, who doesn't? But the point is, he came out and said it. And would you feel bad to see Di Maria go, or is it just the squad is full of potential that it's not a big deal?
No, I think that Di Maria is a bit out of place in this current setup. But if Di Maria does go, there is going to be a replacement. Yes, we've just got Memphis Depay, but he is likely to be played more in a more advanced role rather than somewhere behind the striker. So it's very likely that we'll see Di Maria go and someone else of an equal or greater margin come in to replace him. So I think this is one of those moves that's contingent on something else happening.
Right. A couple of other cool signings. Kabay to Crystal Palace. that one's interesting. I think Kabay is a very good player.
You know why this is interesting?
Yeah.
I think this is interesting because this is one of the minnow teams who have got all this money from the TV deals.
Yeah, $18 million for Kabay. That's quite a bit of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money for a team like
Crystal Palace. But they have played very well at the end of last season. They've got very fast wingers, like we've mentioned numerous times.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Kabay being there kind of spraying passes, I think that is a very shrewd move by, what's his name, Pardew. And I think he's going to do well for them if he can stay fit. And if he really wants to kind of come back into the scene, I think this could be it, and he could do really well.
Yeah.
And Crystal Palace could be comfortably mid-table. So we'll see how that goes for them. Glenn Johnson signed for Stoke. I don't know. Glenn Johnson, to me, just seems way past it. He doesn't defend very well. I think it's good that Liverpool let him go. I don't know why Mark Hughes would be interested. I guess squad depth, but other than
to be fair, I think Glenn Johnson's got a bit of experience there, and he was just past his days at Liverpool. Plus, they just got Nathaniel Clyne to fill in that role, so Johnson's not going to be given that much playing time in Liverpool. It's a good move for Johnson himself.
I agree. I think for him it's a good move because he's not going to get to play at all at Liverpool. So it's up to really him to kind of get a spot at Stoke. The other thing before moving on from Liverpool is Jordan Henderson has made the cover of FIFA 16 in England. So it's a voting process, so he's made that, so, you know.
Yeah, I wonder which Liverpool fan selected Jordan Henderson to be the captain.
Yeah.
I mean, not the captain, the cover of FIFA 16.
Now he's captain as well of Liverpool officially. I think we've all kind of seen that coming. We thought he would be. They seem to be grooming him for that Gerrard replacement kind of thing. And
exactly.
It's more than just on the field. It seems like it's also off the field now.
Yeah.
I think he has that passion. He has that drive. He just needs to consistently perform well.
I think he can mature into a really good player. He's got the size. He's got the strength.
Yeah.
And Liverpool have some interesting transfer dealings this window and could actually be a dark horse.
Yeah, I mean, they're
not really to win the league, obviously.
No, but to get into the top four.
Top four. They will be contenders, yes.
It's so tough. The top four is tough. You've also got Tottenham. It's really hard.
Yeah. And a lot of teams have been busy in the transfer market, but even minnows like Leicester City are signing players like Shinji Okazaki, who are like very good players.
That's true. I mean, that's what the money deal does to you. And you have that spending power.
And Johan Kabay going to Crystal Palace.
It's true. Last but not least, Turan is now officially a Barcelona player. Around 41 million euros, I think, or so. That was a really weird signing because he's possibly their fourth most expensive signing now. And you wouldn't think. It wasn't a name that was thrown out there at all. It looked like Turan was going to go to Chelsea. That just looked set. And then now, I mean, he's always said that he wants to play for Barcelona. It's his dream to play there. But it just seems like such a weird signing.
I'm not sure why Barcelona is making a signing, other than the reason that they didn't get Paul Pogba.
Right.
But to me, I don't understand why they need Paul Pogba to begin with. I mean, this is a team that just won the treble comfortably. with Sergio Busquets running that midfield, mm-hmm. like, and they keep the ball with Rakitic involved as well. No problems there.
That's true. I
mean, they don't need a leg breaker. They just keep the ball and do what they're doing.
He can't play until January either.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
It's, anyways, we talked to Andre Nasri, who was nice enough to give. He's a Barcelona fan and a journalist, and he follows us. And we asked him to kind of give us a glimpse into what this transfer is from a Barcelona fan point of view. So let's see what he had to say.
So Arda Turan to Barcelona was a curious case, to say the least. This was the only Barca signing ever that was approved with an active president in charge in Barcelona. So because Barcelona is currently being run by a managing committee after the president, Bartomeu, stepped down to allow the club to hold a presidential election this month. So for Luis Enrique's express wish to sign a player, Arda Turan, to be granted by this committee is quite unprecedented in Barca history, and it goes far to show how much Luis Enrique believes in the Turk. But Turan doesn't exactly embody Barca's values at first, at least not since Barca has been recognized as that pioneer of free-flowing tiki-taka football over the last decade. But it's worth reminding that Barca is actually evolving away from being that team that was once so easy on the eyes into a ruthless winning machine they are now, which shaped entirely in Luis Enrique's image. And if you've seen Luis Enrique as a player, you know that Arda Turan fits the bill for Luis Enrique's side. And the success of the Messi, Suarez, and Neymar trio of last season was largely down to the positional discipline and tireless hard work from Ivan Rakitic. Now, Arda Turan can offer the same fighting spirit and security on the left side of the midfield to Rakitic's right, while the MSN trio can go on about business as usual in both the creative and the goal-scoring sense. And to see where Arda Turan fits in this current Barca side, we'll have to look back to Iniesta's case last season. Iniesta was sacrificed positionally as he played deeper on the left side of central midfield than he used to in previous seasons. As a result, Barca was much less susceptible to counterattacks, and there was a better balance between the midfield and the attack than we got used to in the previous seasons, especially during the ill-fated Tata Martino reign. Now, Arda Turan is a player who's naturally adept at playing that role. This was perfectly exemplified in Atletico's rise in the 2014-15 season, where Turan and Koke were both the creative force and the defensive steel in Atletico's midfield. And let's not forget that Arda Turan is a brilliant playmaker. He may not be able to replace the legend that is Andres Iniesta, but he can definitely replace Iniesta in the role that he played last season, and I'd argue that Arda Turan would actually do a more effective job at it. Where this signing makes little sense for Barcelona is away from the pitch. Arda Turan will be 29 when he'll finally be able to play for Barca in the second half of this season because of Barcelona's ongoing transfer ban. Spending 34 million euros plus 7 million in variables is a bit much for a player who's nearing his 30s. And if we count the variables, Turan could potentially be the fourth most expensive signing in Barca history behind Suarez, Neymar, and Ibrahimovic. And that's probably difficult for many Barca fans to digest and or justify.
All right, so that was Andra for you. And I think he really summed it up really well. Just describing how it feels from a Barcelona point of view.
Thank you, Andra, for that insightful piece.
Let's move on to another North American, competition that's going on right now, which is the Gold Cup, and it's happening. It's happening all over, and we are actually going to see a game on Tuesday, I think, right?
Yes, we are. We're going to see Canada play the mighty Costa Rica, the team that beat Uruguay in the World Cup last year.
Correct.
Hopefully they're not as good and potent as they were during the World Cup.
We'll see how that goes because, I mean, we'll look at how the tournament has been going on right now and we'll see that Canada, that's a must-win game for them.
Sorry. Absolutely. So how it's played out so far in Group B, which Canada is there. So Jamaica currently on 4 points after 2 games played in first place.
Yeah.
In second place, they've got El Salvador.
And Costa Rica tied.
Costa Rica tied in 2 points each. And then Canada in fourth place.
Right. So if Canada if Canada beat Costa Rica, then they leapfrog them to second.
Yes.
Now they just need to make sure as well that El Salvador doesn't win against
Jamaica. Canada must win, that's for sure. And El Salvador, or whoever's playing...
El Salvador, yeah.
Yes, El Salvador is playing Jamaica. They just need to lose or tie. So the odds are in Canada's favor because Jamaica will most likely beat El Salvador.
Sure, but beating Costa Rica, I mean, we've seen how Canada has done so far. It's been an
Absolutely. They've been abysmal. They haven't even scored a goal yet.
This is similar to Colombia now in the Copa America. So the first game was 0-0 versus El Salvador, which, to be honest, they should be beating.
Yeah.
And then they lost to Jamaica 1-0 in the 91st minute. Horrible defending. The Jamaican had so much space to header that ball in.
Yeah, this is terrible defending. And you can see from the aftermath of the goal, the defenders yelling at the culprit.
Right. And I don't know. So far, it just hasn't been a very successful Gold Cup.
The group could have been looked so much different had that goal not gone in. Everyone would be on 2 points.
Correct. So that's in Group B. So we're going to see that game on Tuesday. Let's hope that Canada can, I guess, create an upset, because Costa Rica is the favorites for this one.
Well, hopefully, being at home, Canada has the advantage, but it's going to take a bit of steel to get through.
Yep. So Group A, just going back, the U.S. are top there by quite a bit, by 6 points. The second is Panama with 2 points, so really, the U.S. really have that one wrapped up. The third group, Group C, Mexico and Trinidad, they're both on 3 points at the top. Mexico beating Cuba 6-0 recently.
Yeah.
The quality of the Gold Cup isn't the best, you have to say.
Yeah, you know what? But this is a competition that's in the interest of the North American teams to participate in. More games internationally to play, more chance of development, more trophies to play for.
Yeah, this is all preparation for a World Cup qualifier. Like, it's not really standalone. It's not as important as, let's say, a World Cup qualifier. But it's always good to kind of get the team together and see them in action.
Absolutely, yeah.
So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that game. I think we're also watching, because it's like a double hitter, we also get to watch El Salvador, Jamaica before. So before, we get to see both games. So basically, if El Salvador wins, we can all go home.
Yes, we'll have to ask for refunds for our tickets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's pretty much it from us. We're going to go and play our UTC game now. And we'll let you know how that goes next week.
Yeah, stay tuned for some results.
Let's hope we... 6-0?
Yeah, maybe 4 this time.
We'll take it easy?
Yeah. Maybe only score a hat-trick.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.